We're under the stage now. It's very spooky. What's your name?
Barry.
I'm with Barry. He's at the event, like me, just hanging out.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. This is Banal of America Audio, Season 9, and stunningly, it's been a month since we last took to the airwaves, which is crazy. I cannot believe it, but that's just the nature of throwing a long vacation in the midst of doing a program like this. And we're going to be delving into the big vacation in just a few moments with my guest, Paul Kimball. But I got to stop the show, so to speak, here for a moment. I want to take a moment and talk about a dear friend of mine who passed away earlier this week. And hopefully I don't get too choked up. I wrote it down. I read it. So hopefully I can get through this. But bear with me, folks. Joe Cosentino, or as many of my friends knew him affectionately as simply Swampy, was a truly larger-than-life person and someone who was simply unforgettable to anyone who spent probably more than 5 minutes with the guy. For those of us who were lucky enough to share part of our lives with him, it was a joyous ride filled with boundless laughter and countless memories. Joe had a puckish spirit that was really infectious, and good times seemed to emerge around him wherever he went. He was also an incredible friend who helped me and many others in ways he probably never truly realized. He was the kind of guy you'd want in the foxhole with you, and someone who, if you were in your most dire moment, he would be there to have your back. His support and loyalty was unquestioned and unquestionable, which are traits that seem to be in short supply nowadays. One footnote, because I want it on the record, and I know he would appreciate it, is that he was literally at the inception of Banal of America. Sitting down in his man cave basement with his brother John, we hatched a plan to launch a website, and even decided on the moniker BOA that evening. The rest, as they say, is history. I couldn't think of a better person to have been there that day than Joe, since he perfectly embodied the independent spirit which has been in the DNA of BOA over all these years. Although the paranormal aspect of it wouldn't emerge until a few years later, the funny part of all this is that Joe was an ardent advocate for many strange and unusual ideas, which often led to fiery conversations about things like UFOs and Bigfoot long before I was talking to the Stan Friedmans and Lauren Colemans of the world. And I can recall seeing him about 3 years ago, well after I'd become some kind of paranormal guru in the amused eyes of my local friends. Joe once again tried, with great purpose, to convince me that UFOs were real. Me. He was trying to convince me that UFOs were real. That's how passionate he could get about things he believed in. Regretfully, I probably never told him this, but Joe really inspired me to be fearless and going against the grain and following the road wherever it may take me. He played by his own set of rules, marched to the beat of his own drummer, and lived life like no one was watching, while at the same time, he was capturing the hearts of everyone in the room. I only wish I had half the devil-may-care attitude that Joe carried with him every day. He was a friend, a brother, a mentor to many, and a proud fellow traveler amongst the dreamers and iconoclasts of the world. And he'll be deeply missed. Godspeed, Swamp. I'm sure I'll be seeing you again someday. On the other side, well, you'll have likely figured out all the loopholes of the afterlife and will be eagerly teaching them to each of us as we arrive. I'm going to miss you, bud. And we'll change the mood now from sad to gladness here and welcome Paul Kimmel to the show. Also a very good friend from a different world, let's say. And, you know, talking about my friend Joe here, who always went above and beyond. Paul went above and beyond for me earlier this month when I was up in Canada, as I said on the BOA Facebook page. An indefatigable host for me while I was in Canada. Of course, if you're unfamiliar with Paul, he's the man behind a myriad of fantastic films. Specifically, the one I love the most. This is Stanton Friedman. Now I sound like a clown because I'm Stanton Friedman. What's the Stanton Friedman movie? This is Stanton Friedman.
Stanton T. Friedman is real. We can change the title.
Oh, you did change the title. All right.
No, we could. We could call it whatever we want.
See, I outsmarted Paul by making him feel bad for me by starting the show, so he won't pick on me as much. No. he's an amazing guy, folks. Paul Kimmel, and you know, I hadn't seen him in 8 years, and this is going to be a laid back edition of the show. This is going to be two buddies talking and recounting this trip and this amazing time. So, Paul, welcome back to Banal of America Audio. Thank you for everything. You know, I said this to you in person, and I said it on Facebook. Now I want to say it on the show here. Thank you for everything. Taking care of me when I was up there, man. I really, really do appreciate it.
Oh, it was great to have you here, Tim. And just let me say my condolences for your friend there. I know how that goes. Several years ago, my good friend Mac Tony's passing away far too young. So it's always sad when that happens. So my condolences. I know it's been a tough week for you. But 2 weeks ago, before the sadness, yeah, we had a lot of fun. And it was my pleasure. Welcome anytime, except for 2017. That might be a bad year. But otherwise, anytime.
I don't even want to know.
Neither do I. It's, now that I've said it, it's probably going to come true.
Yeah.
I just picked that number at random. I was trying to give myself like a year and a half to prepare for it, but it's not enough. I should have said like 2058. Oh, no.
So, as I said, we kind of have a loosey-goosey sort of format here tonight because just to catch folks up to speed who may not really kind of know what we're talking about, a couple of weeks ago, August 7th, 8th, and 9th, in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, was the first ever East Coast Paracon. Paul was a speaker, Stan Friedman was a speaker, Lauren Coleman was a speaker, Chip Coffey had a special presentation there, and a whole host of local speakers were there as well, and I was there on vacation. So we all came together for a fun weekend up in Canada, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about observations from the trip in general and stuff I picked up from being in Canada, I guess for the second time, but new observations I made, and yeah, all that good stuff. So before we get into all that, Paul, what have you been up to for the ardent BOA audio listeners, you know, who are familiar with your many appearances on the program? Give them an update on what you've been working on since they last heard from you.
Well, I've been recovering from helping my fellow Canadians repel the Fenian Banal of America invasion of 2 weeks ago. I mean, that was tough, but still, the true North, strong and free. We're still an independent country, so that's good news. Other than that, I spent most of the summer shooting a feature film, which I'm now heavy into post-production on. Should be out in December, called Exit Thread. So yeah, that basically takes up all my time. I don't really do all. I think I've developed the foot thing. The
plantar fasciitis?
Yeah, I think so. I got up a couple of days ago, and I couldn't, like, this shooting pain through my heel, and I went, ah, and it's getting worse, so I'm going to actually have to go see a foot doctor or something. I feel like Ryan Zimmerman of the Washington Nationals.
Yeah.
Because he had that earlier this year. Nobody needs to know that, but if there are any foot doctors out there. Other than that, yeah, everything's...
Kelly's a foot doctor.
Is she?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Oh, she's a foot nurse, right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe I could, there you go.
And she's listening, I'm sure, so get in touch.
Help me! It hurts! Other than that, yeah, no, basically eat, sleep, drink non-alcoholic beverages, and edit my film. That's basically what I've been up to.
Right.
And, yeah, so it'll be good to wade into the paranormal or the strange events of Liverpool, Nova Scotia, which, by the way, folks, not only is it Liverpool, Nova Scotia, but it's also in the banks of the Mersey River in Nova Scotia. So it's like an alternate dimension Liverpool. So it's not Liverpool, England, but it's Liverpool, Nova Scotia, with the Mersey River and no Beatles.
No Beatles.
Although a Beatle did play there once.
Is this the... The drummer, Pete, though, right?
Yeah, Pete Best, I think, played a gig in Liverpool once. We were supposed to open for him, and we couldn't go. Ironically enough, because our drummer was unavailable.
Oh, weird.
So if only we had had Ringo to fill in, then we could have gone down. But, yeah.
Nice, nice. Now, yeah, so I'm going to try and share my thoughts on Canada as we go along. And I'm going to be on my best behavior, though, because the last time I did one of these conference breakdowns, I think I got banned from the town of Exeter. So we don't want that to happen with Canada.
What could you possibly say that would be negative about Canada? We're a wonderful country with better potato chips than you have.
You guys have world-class potato chips, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, Kelly says she's listening. Yeah, we'll let's give a shout-out now so we don't forget. I'm sure we'll mention. She says she can help your plantar fasciitis. There you go.
Perfect.
Kelly Conley and Linda Rafuse from the Crossed Over Paranormal Society. They were kind of like the straws that stirred the drink most of the weekend at the East Coast Paracon, along with a lot of other people. Those were the two that we kind of befriended the most. So they were awesome, and all the people at the East Coast Paracon were awesome, and the Crossed Over Paranormal. It was fun. I don't know how you are. I can imagine, but it's like it was fun being, in a way, like the wizened dude who's been a part of these for a while, because they were just, like, so tired, and it's an exhausting experience to sort of be running one of these things or even be a part of, like, the staff of one of these conferences. So it was like, I was kind of bemused to see them go operating on like 3 hours of sleep. It was rough.
Yeah, no, it was interesting too, because it's the first time they've ever done it, and they were asking our advice on, you know, potential speakers, and I'm just thinking, this is a dream come true.
Right.
You know, so I think it's safe to say we can mention one name, but we won't mention others. Some we said, look, here's people we would recommend. Like I happily recommended Nick Redfern, for instance.
Yeah.
Or Aaron Gullius or Greg Bishop. But Stephen Greer's name came up. And you know, I had a relatively long conversation with them about the ins and outs of Greerdom and why that was probably not a good idea. And so, you know, they were like, oh, okay, good to know, check. And so if you see a conference lineup next year that looks surprisingly like something that that Tim or I might have created, we you know, you never know.
But, yes, our fingerprints may be on next year's event.
Yeah, small. They're great people. They ran a great show. It's always tough to do a first year of anything. It's tough to make a first album. It's tough to make a first film. It's tough to be, you know, first year as president. It's tough to run a first year of a paranormal conference. And so, for the most part, there were a couple hiccups, but there always are.
Right.
For the most part, you know, they ran a really, what I would say, fun event.
Mm.
I mean, I've been to the X Conference, Bassett's, you know, event. I've been to the International UFO Conference in when it was in Laughlin, Nevada. I've been to a MUFON symposium. And the one thing that I would say about, and I ran my own, the one thing I would say about the East Coast Paracon is, of all of those, it was the most, leaving mine aside because I get to hang out with my friends,
right.
It was fun. It was like there was a genuine atmosphere of open-minded sort of gee whiz, this is just really cool that we have Stan Friedman and Lauren Coleman and Chip Coffee here, and we really want to talk and meet these guys. As opposed to, you know, the X Conference, where the general mood was the government's out to get us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not a happy vibe. Or, you know, the International UFO Conference can be fun, but only if you plant your tongue firmly in cheek, because everybody who's there is so serious. But it can be a little fun. And the MUFON symposiums, they're not fun. They're not unfun. They're just these people take themselves too seriously.
That's the words I was going to say. Yeah.
These folks took the subject seriously, but they didn't take themselves too seriously. I mean, everybody was there to have fun. It was, and I think you get that with a smaller town like Liverpool's a town of maybe 2,500 people. It's fairly isolated. It's about two hours from Halifax. And, you know, I think in that small town kind of community, you have that sense of community where it's a much more enjoyable event to attend, where everybody's just having fun and nobody's getting bent out of shape or anything. I mean, there was the angel lady, whose name escapes me. I can't remember her name, but she had written books about angels. Karen Forrest, there you go. And she came on after I did, and she came up, and she was like a whirling dervish of Tasmanian devil, energy.
Mm.
And I had no idea who she was or what she was doing, but I knew she was speaking. Because she was a replacement. A guy, the last speaker of the day was going to be on Oak Island, and because of, I think, a death in the family, he couldn't make it. So they plugged her in at the last minute. That's fine. And she, oh, I really liked your talk, and blah, 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 blah. You're so easygoing and so good in front of an audience, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull that off, and blah, 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 blah. And I went, nice meeting you.
Yeah.
And so I walked away, and I tried to stay and see every speaker. So I said, look, she was nice to me. I should be trying to sell books. But I'm going to stay and listen to her lecture. And that was both a mistake and an interesting choice that worked out well, I guess, because I think, she's a very nice lady, but she seemed, crazy. And I've been to some weird lectures. Like, I've seen people at the International UFO Conference talk about Billy Meyer.
Hmm.
It doesn't get much weirder than that. And I've seen Jonathan Reed on television when Jaime Maussan, I've watched the video of his appearances with Jaime Maussan. This lady was just so far out there that for the first 10 minutes I went, okay, can I get out of this room without being, no, I can't. There's only about 50 people here at this moment, and they're going to notice if I leave, so I got to stay. And then it sort of took on a kind of like, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's just see where this goes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just kept getting weirder and weirder, and she was calling down bad angels and good angels, or I have no idea. And yet, here's the thing. Everybody, and I'm sure of the people who were, half thought she was, like, completely insane. The other half actually seemed to go, angels, this makes sense. Tell us more.
Right.
And it was just so surreal, but everybody seemed to be sort of, like having fun. Nobody was laughing at her or laughing with her. Just kind of like, yeah, okay, this is weird. This is not what I would normally be in for, but let's just enjoy the ride and see where it goes. And by the end, I kind of went, I'm sort of glad I sat through that hour and a half long, black hole event horizon of, oh, wait, it isn't an event horizon. I can get out of angeldom. It was madness. And yet, enticingly, she was giving away free stuff too, which I've never seen at a conference, including me. I didn't give away free stuff, thought of it, but she said, okay, who wants a copy of my book? And nobody raised their hands because I think everybody thought, we're going to have to pay for it. She said, it's free. It's like the hands go up. And she gave away three or four more copies of her books, and I thought, even if I think she's crazy, she's giving away free stuff.
Yeah.
This is fun. So, it was that kind of weekend where even the speeches, if I had heard something like that at the X conference, I probably would have, and I would have walked out. But because of just the vibe at the East Coast Para Conference, I said, yeah, let's just roll with it, let's have some fun. And that's kind of the vibe the whole thing had, which was great.
Yeah, that really, pretty much, yeah. The, when you said gee whiz, that was kind of like, yeah, it summed it up. There was people who, it seemed like they were just kind of like, they hadn't got that jaded, cynical aspect of it all yet. So it was like really nice to be around that.
Well, yeah, and it was very it was a paranormal conference because Stan was talking about UFO crashes, alleged UFO crashes. Lauren was there talking about Bigfoot or monsters. I shouldn't call them monsters. Creatures like Bigfoot,
cryptids.
So the Yowie, the Aran, but that kind of hominid creature, not. And so he threw in some other cryptids too. That's true. But he didn't have the paranormal aspect like Nick would, where he would be talking about tulpas or something. But still, most people would consider Bigfoot paranormal. Chip Coffey was doing the psychic medium thing. Weirdly enough, they had a couple of ladies who'd written a book about a poltergeist case in Amherst, Nova Scotia, that I'd never heard of in the late 19th century. And while I found their presentation a little dry, and if Aaron Gullius is listening, he'll appreciate this, they treated it as sort of as historians. And they spent, I think, a little too much time talking about her family history, which, get me to the paranormal stuff, folks.
Right, right.
But still, they were skeptics. At the end, they debunked the story. They said, look, we think that this was a person with psychological problems and everything. And I thought, well, okay, that's refreshing to hear at a paranormal conference. Usually, they would have gone right off the deep end into Satan was there kind of thing.
Exactly.
But they went, so there was a little bit of everything. They had a ghost author panel, which unfortunately, because you and I had been out exploring the night before, I missed that because it was first thing in Saturday.
It was early.
Yeah, it was very early. But I know two of the authors, and everybody who was there said it was really Steve Vernon Oikel, and Daryl Walsh, who's a, and they're all authors of ghost-related books up here. And, you know, that was everything they did kind of, all the speakers were nice people, they were fun people, and it was sort of a potpourri of the paranormal. So it wasn't just UFOs, or it wasn't just Bigfoot. And then there was my lecture, which was just a hot mess, as they would say. A sprawling, I had everything.
Yeah, that's kind of, you kind of were the good, you were kind of like the cheese on top or something, you know? You kind of pulled it all together a little bit, you know?
Indeed.
You captured the UFOs and the ghosts and the paranormal in general, so yeah.
And I proposed to you.
Yes, you did, in a made-up language.
In a made-up language, yes. There's actually a picture somebody took of me on one knee in front of witnesses proposing a marriage to Tim in Valencian, which is not an actual language. So it doesn't. It's not legally binding.
Exactly, I was going to say, yeah. So it's not legally binding.
Indeed.
So I guess it's hard to really even begin, but I'll try. So I drove up with my family. And met Paul at this, this is part one of how awesome Paul is, because he drove like 2 hours up to New Brunswick to get me, right? That's in New Brunswick, yeah, Aulac. He picked me up at some shady-looking gas station in Aulac, New Brunswick, which, I don't know, it seems like it's just like one of those roadside things. I don't know, it's cool, though.
It's the Irving Big Stop. It's legendary. We should have eaten there. They've got great diners.
I heard they have great restaurants at the Irvings, yeah.
Most of them, yeah.
So then Paul drove me. So Paul drove up 2 hours, and then drove me 2 hours back to Halifax. So again, like I was really in awe of that. The more it sunk in too later on, I was just like, Jesus, dude, this guy's unbelievable. So I really appreciate it. And there was something about I don't recall. Oh yeah, just that you don't have a cell phone, so you don't. So I was all paranoid because I was going to be like a half hour late, but you told me not to worry about it, so I tried not to.
Yeah, I was like actually 20 minutes early, so I just spent about an hour hanging out in the parking lot watching trucks come in because it's a truck stop, and it was a lovely day. You know, it's out in the middle of nowhere. It's a rural area, so it's just like, this is lovely. This is much nicer than the city. So, yeah, it was all good.
Yeah, okay, good. Do you think you'll ever get a cell phone?
No.
See, you have the iPad, though. I feel like you're just missing the phone part.
The truth is, it's not the actual interconnectivity that bothers me, because I do have an iPad, and I obviously use Facebook a lot and whatever. I just hate phones. I don't like talking to people on a phone in general. So I don't answer my phone at home. I have a landline. I never answer it. I prefer to deal with people face-to-face, or I prefer to write things down. But I've sort of, me and phones don't get along all that well, although I seem to be doing fine now. So that's probably what it really is. And I hate texting. The idea of texting is people who text should be shot.
And the problem with texting, too, we're just going to turn into old man radio now, but the problem with texting is, like, you don't text. Obviously, you don't text.
No.
I just started texting in, like, the last 2 years, and it's just like I'm so behind the curve on how to do it. Do you know what I mean? It's like you text someone, you don't wait for them. You don't know when they're going to get back to you. You have no, you know, it's just too frustrating. It's just too weird. But there's like a whole generation of people that's all they do is text. So it's really like almost like speaking in a foreign language to people sometimes, because they're just like, they text in a whole different way. It's hard. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I'm going to become Ted Kaczynski at some point, because I'm a grammar Nazi. I mean, I really am. I'm a hardline Nazi when it comes to grammar.
I am, too, and that's why texting sucks for me, too.
It is.
Like, you have to go back and be like, oh, I need a comma and apostrophe in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Where's the Oxford commas? Where's the capitals? It's ruining people. It's ruining language. It's ruining – I actually think it's making communication, real communication between people, harder because they – and this touches – look, so we don't be accused of old men. This touches on a theme that I was talking about in my lecture, which is communication and how aliens might communicate to us or whatever. So there's the tangential link, which allows me to rant for 30 seconds. But it's ruining communication. It's ruining – people think they're communicating, but they're not actually communicating. And as they text, studies have shown that we become less, especially kids, are growing up less inclined to human interaction, like, you know, and more inclined to interact on the web or on Ashley Madison, maybe. I don't know. There's my topical reference for
nice.
Today.
Nice.
So I don't know. I just, everything about it, I never thought I'd become the crazy, cranky old uncle kind of guy, but I've become the crazy, cranky old uncle. I loathe it. And while I recognize the utility, and I really do like Facebook, but I don't use Facebook really to interact in terms of, you know, chatting with people.
Yeah.
I use it to just post stuff. So to me, it's like a bulletin board of crazy cat pictures and stuff. Texting
yeah.
and cell phones, no. Can't do it. So I'd rather wait 50 minutes at the border at New Brunswick going, hey, where's Tim? I must be running late. I'm fine. Because that's how we used to do it back in the old days.
All right. Well, I appreciate that you were, yeah. I felt wicked bad, but then I was like, hey, my hands are tied.
Now, if you've been 2 hours late,
I'll be honest with you, dude. I thought we were going to be 2 hours late. My God bless her, my crazy mother drove like over 100 miles an hour. Not kilometers either. Like 100, like she was like, I'm like, oh my God, this is insane. So like, I don't know if you use GPS or not, but it's like the GPS has your estimated arrival time. And like, she's going so fast that things like clicking down like a minute every 5 minutes she was shaving time off of the trip. It was like, oh my God, this is like, this is frightening. But,
yeah, I don't use GPS either, as my friend, my producing partner, Andrew Sewell, will tell you. I hate GPS as well. I got news for you. That's what maps were made for. Take a look at the map before you leave, and then take the map with you. And then if you get lost, wing it. The journey is the destination. I actually really do believe that. And this idea of using GPS, first of all, I think GPS, more people get lost using GPS than not. I think this Skynet at some point will take over and go, turn left here. And the next thing you know, you'll drive your car into an ocean, part of the robot revolution. But, you know, sometimes the best trips are the ones where you turn right where you're not supposed to. And then after the inevitable fight with your girlfriend, wife, fiance, whoever it is you're traveling with, about
yeah.
whose fault it is, you go, hey, you know what, where we wound up, this is actually pretty cool, let's explore. And I'm not a GPS guy either. I'm like Thoreau. I live in my own little Walden world.
This is a good connection to what happened to me on the next day. So Paul picks me up, brings me to Halifax, got me a really awesome place in the hipster district of Halifax for the night. Really a cool place. It was like a hostel. I really, really liked that place a lot.
The Commons Inn on Agricola Street in Halifax, for anyone who's wondering.
Yes, the Commons Inn. There you go. I'll come back in, actually, to this story. This connects all to this phone GPS thing. So then we go out for a drink and a burger. Really an excellent burger, too. Do you know the name of that place?
Ace Burgers, consistently voted the best burger place in Halifax year after year, and it's on the corner of North Street and Agricola in Gus's Pub, which is the hipster swinging indie music locale now in Halifax. So
right. And even though I rip on hipsters on the show, I do like, you know, makes me feel young again to be around them, even though they probably look at me with scorn. But
me too. That's why I like Greg Bishop, because he's the ultimate hipster.
Exactly. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that the hipsters probably wouldn't look at with scorn. Maybe
exactly.
One of us.
Actually, he hates hipsters, so that's why I'm
oh.
he hates them.
Now we made it even worse. So we go to Ace Burger, and then Paul has work to do, so he passes me off. He hands me off to Graham Sims, who will be on the show eventually here on the program. He's the co-author of Impact to Contact, the Shag Harbor Incident. And he joined us at the Oak Island event. So he met up with me originally back 8 years ago. And so let me see here. He wrote that book with Chris Stiles, that Impact to Contact. And we spent some time talking about UFOs and fun stuff like that. And then Graham and I went to we tried to convince Graham of the problems with the Roswell slides, but he didn't seem like he was having it. So I'll have to ask him about it when we get him back on the show. And so then the next day, got to give a shout out to Graham here, because I have like multiple phone issues. This is why I mentioned this connects to the story here, because I don't know how much of this I told you. First, the phone wouldn't work. My iPhone. So I'm wandering around downtown Halifax, trying to figure out what's going on here. My phone won't work. Luckily, since I can talk to the Siri thing, she could fix it, which is kind of amazing. So that was one good thing. And Graham sort of toured me around Halifax and showed me, like, some of the various areas and stuff like that. And then we split up, and he went back to his place and at this, like, giant park. And he kind of, like, just pointed me in the direction of the Commons Inn. And this is like, spooky in a way because I had no – my phone died. And for some reason, because I'm a lunatic, I had no idea what the name of the Commons Inn was. I just relied entirely on the technology. So I was like, well, I'll just use the GPS to get me back to the hotel. I'll go on Facebook to get the name of it. But once the phone was dead, I had no access to any of that information. So I literally wandered around downtown Halifax for like a half an hour, maybe even like an hour, just sort of like saying in my mind, like in, it was some kind of in. And eventually I remembered that it was Commons Inn and like stumbled into some antique shop where they looked at me like I was a lunatic. And I was like, where's the Commons Inn? And they're like, oh, two streets over. I was like, oh, thank God. So the perils
I rest
of
my
so
case.
Far. Yeah.
I rest my case.
Yeah. True story. True story. The perils of the cell phone. I was like, oh, but I'll never let that happen again. You're nuts.
And it's not like it's a hard name to remember. It's not like it was the Ferdinand and Isabella dormitory of reformed young schoolgirls or something. It's the Commons Inn.
That's so basic, though. That's probably why I couldn't remember it.
You probably would have remembered the other one, reformed schoolgirls. What?
Exactly.
No, but the Commons Inn, just for some reason, Tim couldn't remember the name. And Ace Burgers, again, not exactly, you know, that's not Tolstoy-esque. I have no idea. Ace Burgers, the Commons Inn. You can tell I live in a very, very sort of normal neighborhood when it comes to names. And across the street is Smith's Bakery. So Ace Burger, Smith's Bakery, Commons Inn. They try and make it simple for folks.
Hmm.
And yet Tim, somehow, still got lost.
Yeah, Commons Inn. It's hard to remember.
It used to be the King Edward Inn. That probably.
Now, I definitely would remember that. And the other observation I made about Halifax that I didn't post on Facebook that I wanted to mention, I mentioned it to Paul when we were hanging out. I was really just blown away by how fit the city was, specifically the women. Like, it was unbelievable, folks. I was, like, in absolute awe. I was, like, just every woman I saw in Halifax was in tremendous shape. I was like, oh, my God, I feel like such a schlub in this city. It's unbelievable. So kudos to your town.
It's all part of our plan to invade the United States. We
please
you
do.
You outnumber us 10-1, so we have to be 10 times in better shape.
Listen, I'll be waiting at the border.
We just keep shipping beer and lobster and donuts down to you, get you big and fat, and eventually when we show up to invade, you'll just go, whatever.
It was tremendous. I was really, I was blown away by the ladies of Halifax, so kudos to them. It didn't seem to take to the rest of where I went, so I think it's an urban thing, too, but who knows? People in the city, they got to look good or something. I don't know.
No comment. I have no comment.
Yeah, no. That's not a – no. That was just a general statement. I just mean it was, like, overwhelmingly. It was just like, what is going on here? That's what I was – I felt like I was on another planet.
He did talk about it for at some length. He was like, I can't believe it. All the women here are just that they're so fit and they're in shape and everything else. And I went, yeah, just sort of, I guess, seems normal to me. He's like, well, it's not like this home, blah, blah.
It's not.
So, yeah.
All right. So then that's pretty much my time in Halifax. It was a really short stay. Loved the hotel. We put over all the stuff, put over Graham Sims. So then Paul and I traveled to Liverpool, about an hour and a half, 2 hours south of Halifax, had a spirited debate about all sorts of wrestling-related stuff throughout the whole thing. We won't bore you folks with that, but
yeah, we didn't talk about the paranormal at all, really. It was all wrestling,
right?
Basically,
it was all wrestling to the point where we were driving through like Lunenburg, which is like this historic town that's really nice and gorgeous, and you're like, you know, kind of pointing things out, and I'm just like, there will never be I was just like, you know, I couldn't even get off of like some argument about Edge or the WWE Network. You're like,
yeah,
just look around.
It was the network. It's like, this is a UNESCO World Heritage Historic Site, Tim. Yeah, and the WWE Network, you're completely wrong and you're unimaginative, but take a look at this building over here. It's like, ah!
Yeah.
I'm surprised you even remember you were in Lunenburg. You weren't frothing at the mouth, but yes, it was a spirited conversation.
Right,
and
right.
And then he said, I got to stop and use the bathroom. So we found a Tim Hortons, which is, you can find one of those anywhere. And we get some coffee and use the washroom, and then we trundled along, I think while continuing. No, I think we stopped talking about the WWE shortly after.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
or as I call them, T-hoes.
T-hoes, yes. That hasn't really caught on up here yet.
Mm. Now listen to this. I was noticed this while I was up there. Maybe you can – this is something I don't know if you've noticed, but it happened to me several times. They seem like they're always running out of things up there at T-hoes. Like, several times I would go, like, later at night, and they would be like, no, we don't have the chicken sandwich anymore. We're out of it.
Well,
what is that?
The key word is in your sentence, later at night.
Right, right.
So, yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of Tim Hortons, although I do like their soups. They used to make things fresh and sort of from scratch, including their donuts. Several years ago, they stopped doing that, and now it's all kind of prefab made, and including their donuts. So their coffee is swill, their donuts are mediocre at best, and their food, actually, you know, the best part about them, ironically now, is their food.
Yeah.
Because they used to be a coffee and donut place. Those are two things they can't get right anymore. Their coffee is horrible. And
it's bad, yeah. It made me sick
home. It's terrible. But their food, their soup is actually okay, and their sandwiches, you know, it's pretty hard to screw up a grilled cheese sandwich, and you seem to like their jalapeno chicken.
Yeah, it was great.
So, yeah, he was two-fisting them, folks. He was ordering two. He'd say, yeah, can you wrap that one up for me? And the thing I noticed about Tim is he always refers to people who work at places. I can't say this whether you do this with guys because we didn't really have any guys' service, but it was always women. He always refers to them by their name. He's like, hey, Kaylee, you know, how's it going today? And I'm just thinking, no, I just order your coffee, man. So he's much more polite. It was very Canadian. Because I usually just go, hi, I'll have a coffee or whatever, and then, yeah, have a nice day. But he was engaging them and chatting them up and being witty and friendly. So it was a kinder, gentler Tim than all.
See? I matured since the last time I was there. Not camping helped.
Although we just ripped on Tim Hortons, so now we'll be hated in Canada. So.
Yeah. Well, it just seemed to me it was like, geez, you guys got to get more of your stuff. How do you keep running out of, like, chicken and sausage or what? You know, it's just weird. It was just really
Well, they're very popular, too. So people, I mean, it's their licenses to print money.
Hmm.
If you
want
a Tim Hortons, it's just So, yeah, anyway, that's enough about T-hoes, which, again, has not caught on.
I know. Well, if there's any Canadians listening, which I'm sure there are, T-hoes, try it out. It has, like, a really, I like it. It has a charming ring to it.
He actually ran that by a girl who was working at a Tim Hortons. He said, so, does anybody here ever call you guys T-hoes? And I started to back away. And I'm just thinking, oh, that can be taken in such a wrong way.
Oh,
I know how he means it, but I'm not sure. And she didn't get it, but she seemed to go with the flow, and he explained it. And she thought it was funny, but I just thought, you know, there's a few T-hoes that you could be in where maybe that wouldn't have gone. So.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we drive down, then we get to Liverpool, gorgeous place. The hotel's like set back, which is cool, but it gives a spooky vibe to it, which I actually liked. It's set back like a Texas prison or something. You know, it's like it's a huge lawn. You have to walk like a huge way on this lawn to get to anything else, and it's like I wouldn't want to walk. Well, we did walk there at night, but it's spooky. It's spooky.
Yeah, it is.
So we go in first day. I want to put over the opening ceremony, Melissa Labrador, the Mi'kmaq artisan and cultural spiritual awareness workshop facilitator. She gave a really cool sort of opening thing that kind of, you know, just with this stuff called smudge, which is this like incense that she burned in a like a little shell thing and kind of wafted at people in the audience. It was cool. It was nice. You know, it was kind of got everything off on the right note in a way. You know, it was like we're here to have some fun and experience some different things and stuff. So I thought that was really nice.
Yes, and I will chime in and say it was a lovely Mi'kmaq ceremony. Tim's using the old school pronunciation Mi'kmaq.
Hmm.
We still have the Mi'kmaq mall, but generally speaking, I believe it's Mi'kmaq now. Hmm. So we're giving both sides of the coin there.
Okay. Well, I have Mi'kmaq ancestry.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good to hear you. There we are. So yeah, that was nice. Was it weird? Not weird, but it was weird because normally you don't see stuff like that. The only thing I can ever compare it to is the other really fun conference I once went to and spoke at, which was the 2008 Retro UFO Conference held at the Integratron in the middle of nowhere in California. Boy,
nice.
That was hot.
Yeah.
And they had the same kind of a very spiritual opening. It was Reverend, in quotation marks, Bob Short, who's an old contactee, and I think there was a Native American there too. I'm pretty sure there was. And anyway, they a circle, and they did of course there were. There were drums and stuff, and they did this sort of spiritual welcoming ceremony. And I thought, yeah. So the only other time I'd ever seen it, you'll never get that at Steve Bassett's conference. You get a 20-minute diatribe against the NSA or something. So it was
nice. Yeah. Somebody might bust out like a voodoo doll of Obama or something.
Exactly. Disclosure, president, my ass. Poke, 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 poke. feel the pain, Obama. Poke. That was nice. That was I thought that was actually a really cool way, and it was also the kind of thing you would only see at a conference that was held in the Maritimes, because
obviously yeah.
That's where the Mi'kmaq are native to. You wouldn't see it in British Columbia or Arizona or something. So yeah, it was cool. It added a nice piece of authenticity of hominess to the location.
Mm. Then was in
the Best Western Hotel, which was like a prison from The Walking Dead, but a really nice prison, I have to say.
Oh, it was fantastic inside. It was just a weird setting where you're.
It was where it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a suite. They gave me a suite, which was awesome. Thank you very much, folks. So I had a living room. It was bigger. It was bigger than my apartment.
It was nice.
I wonder if I could live here. And then I realized they charged me like $200 a day. So perhaps not. But
how do you like this? I was outside. The second night connects to that in a way, because I was outside the second night on the patio just having some beers by myself and reading my iPad, and this dude came down. He was having a cigarette. We kind of got out to chatting, and something happened with his house where the insurance company completely messed up, and he'd been living there for 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that story went in a direction I didn't see it going.
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
Because it started off sad, really. I was out having a couple beers by myself on the patio at the isolated Best Western in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Reading my iPad. I wasn't
reading
just
my iPad
crying.
At 1 o'clock in the morning. And then this guy came out and chatted me up. Where's this story going, Tim? But it ended up in a nice place. And then he sent me a Facebook message or something saying, hey, dude, I'm underneath your window. You want to come down? And I'm thinking, it's 1 in the morning, Tim. We just finished a ghost investigation. I got to speak at 9 or whatever in the morning. Go. I politely was like, I think I'm just going to grab some sleep here, Tim. Thank you for the offer, though. But it was a Romeo and Juliet moment.
It was. That probably inspired the proposal the next day, now that we think.
Yeah, that's actually where it came from, yeah.
So then there was the meet and greet, which is, it's a meet and greet, folks. What I liked about this, I should put this over too, is like, because we know Stan, and you just met Lauren, but you knew him, virtually, let's say.
Yeah.
Leading into all this. So, but the cool part was like, there was really, a lot of these things, you go for the meet and greet, and there was like so much time, you could really, you never were unable to talk to these guys. Which is great, not just for us who know them, but for people who wanted to ask questions and stuff. They were incredibly accessible, so that's a good thing. Because this isn't a criticism, but at the Exeter event, there was just so many people that you couldn't even get a word in edgewise with Stan, and it's like, oh God. But this, there was still a lot of people at the East Coast Paracon, but it was formatted in a way that there was a lot of sort of downtime or just time available to talk to these guys, which was great.
There was, and that would be one of my critiques on other days, that some of the scheduling, there was too much time, sort of lost some energy between speakers sometimes because they built in this time where people could wander through the vendor rooms or whatever. And my theory is people are not going to go see every lecture. They will find their own time to wander through vendor rooms. What you want to do is you want to sort of keep the energy going as much as possible. But on the opening night, and that doesn't mean I'm right or wrong. That's just how I would do it.
Yeah.
On the opening night, Oh, excuse me.
Bless you.
That's, yeah, there you go. There's karma telling me you're wrong. There was plenty of time, and apparently they started, like, we got there at 3 o'clock, and people were wandering in and out throughout the entire day sort of thing. The only person who didn't participate in the meet and greet, who had his own table that he was supposed to sit at, was Paul Kimball. Because I hate doing that. I just hate sitting at a table and having people come over and chat with me. I prefer to chat with them, as I did. I wandered through the crowd, and I hung out with Stan and Lauren and sort of participated a bit in chats they had with other people, and then I met some people at a, you know, just wandering around. I kind of prefer it that way. I don't like to be the, you know, have the spotlight. People won't believe this when I say it, but I really don't like, you know, sort of having the spotlight shining on me and people feeling like they have to come by your table and say hello. So I kind of just wandered. But everybody else, yeah, it was very accessible. It was very casual.
Yeah, yeah, good
which,
word,
which
yeah.
Which was nice. Yeah. There was nobody there in a suit and tie, except for Stan. And but that's his gig.
Right.
That's casual for him. So, yeah, it was very laid back, very casual. Yeah, it was a good, it was a sort of a good start. And then I think they had, we didn't go, I know where we went. Yes,
yeah.
Of course, they had a ghost investigation. They had four. They had a ghost walk on Friday night and Saturday night, and then they had four different ghost investigations at different sites. I can't remember them all. One is the Hank Snow Museum.
I got it here. I got it here.
The other one was the Astor Theater, which we went to on Saturday. What were the other two?
Well, on Friday night, it was Queens County Museum, Lane's Privateer Inn, Hank
right.
Snow Museum, and the Grace Space.
Oh, okay.
And the Astor was the next night. Well, it's not listed here, so I'm not sure why. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so all these different sites around. And the thing to know about Nova Scotia, especially the South Shore, is for Americans, it's kind of like Maine. So there's a reason Stephen King wrote all those spooky books about Maine. You know, it's just generally a spooky place with a lot of, you know, raggedy coastline with a lot of inlets and small towns and hamlets and long history of stories of hauntings and ghost ships and all sorts of strange things.
Yeah, like a rich maritime history,
yeah,
too.
Very, very paranormal history. And Helen Creighton was the legendary Atlantic Canadian folklorist who compiled most of these stories in a book called Blue Nose Ghosts many years ago. And so when we did a series here called Ghost Cases, it was originally going to be called Maritime Ghosts because we were doing it for a regional network, and I wanted to do a few episodes outside Nova Scotia or the Maritimes just for sales purposes. I thought, look, we could reach a bigger audience in sales if we do four or five episodes in the U.S. or the U.K., which is where we eventually wound up being. But there is no lack of ghosts. We could have done like eight seasons of 10 seasons of ghost stories here. And so every town has like 20 allegedly haunted places. So there's plenty of, you know, grist for the mill of ghost investigation. And I thought that was a really nice thing, too. I'm sure there are conferences that do this. I just hadn't been to one.
Right.
I guess the one.
I
guess
the ghost
conference
probably almost definitely does ghost hunts that night or something.
And the UFO conferences, I went to one once where they did a sky watch, where you could drive out in the desert and sit on the hood of your car and look for UFOs. So fair enough. But, you know, they did it at multiple sites, too, which I thought was kind of cool. And they brought there was an investigation group from St. John, New Brunswick that came down. Loyalists. Do you have the name? Is Loyalist Investigations or something?
I can get it, but it was in tandem with the Crossed Over Paranormal Society.
Yes.
So,
there were a group of people. Kelly led the one that we went on Saturday night. Linda Rafuse that night, I know, was at the Hank Snow Museum because I ran into her after Chip Coffee, and she said she was off to the Hank Snow Museum. So if you're a country music fan, you can go to the Haunted Hank Snow Country Music Museum. And that would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
But, so that was Friday night. They did some of that. Tim and I did not go because we decided to explore the town.
Yes, yes.
Moving on to Saturday.
Well, no, I'll just...
the less we say. We found a bowling alley with a bar in it. That's
right,
all you need
right.
to know.
That's really all you need to know, folks. We found a bowling alley with a bar in it, and...
we didn't bowl.
Yeah. Use your imagination, folks.
We watched the Blue Jays beat the Yankees that night.
And yeah, so it was a good time. It was fun. It was definitely fun getting away and sort of enjoying that. So then the next day I was hurting, but I managed to get up bright and early and ready for the author's panel, which I enjoyed quite a bit. I didn't stick around as long as I would have liked for it, but as you said earlier, Vernon Oikle, Darrell Walsh, and Steve Vernon, they did the author's panel. They were great guys and really great storytellers.
I know Vernon fairly well. I've read it. He writes fiction too, but I've read a number of his books. Daryl Walsh used to host a television series here in Canada for Space, the name of which escapes me. It was something like Paranormal Investigator or whatever. And I don't know Steve Vernon at all, but I hear he's quite good from Vernon, Oikel. So yeah, that would have been a good panel. I'm just surprised you weren't concussed on Saturday morning when you get up. And that's my last comment about Friday night. But anyway, moving on.
Right. Hey, man, I'm like Ric Flair. I party all night, but I'm ready for bell time the next
it's
day.
It's true. You might have drank more than I did, but you were up earlier than I was. So clearly you're younger and your constitution still allows you to do that. I was shocked. I came down. He went, "Hey, Kimball." I went, "Oh, my God, you're alive. I mean, up." How did that happen?
And years of practice.
Yes, I've been here all morning, man. It's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, that was all good fun.
Yeah, yeah. Just to cross the T's and dot the I's, Daryl's show is Shadow Hunter on the Space Channel. And
that's what it was, yeah.
And the other ghost folks were Loyalist City Paranormal from New Brunswick.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Shadow Hunter was produced by a company here in Halifax, actually. So very maritime oriented. I think it ran for 2 seasons. I'm not sure.
So yeah, I only hung out for a little bit of that because I'm gonna be honest, folks. I really one of the big reasons I came up is because I absolutely adore Lauren and Stan, and to be around them at the same time to me was like likened it to meeting like Bob Dylan and Mick Jagger and getting to hang out with them in the same room at the same time. That's kind of, in a way, they're kind of the paranormal equivalent. So to me, it was like I listened to the speakers, I enjoyed them. And then I'm like, I got to get out there and get in between the tables here. And I did. I hung out literally like between the two tables, Lauren and Stan, out in the lobby, and just chatted with them for a good part of the morning. And really enjoyed it quite a bit. It was like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to hang out with them sort of behind the velvet rope, if you will. So kudos to those guys for being so welcoming and cool to me and just being like, hey, what's up, catching up on stuff. So it was cool. What happened then? Then Lauren gave his presentation, and I hadn't seen Lauren in years do a presentation. I thought it was quite good. I thought it was really, I thought it was funny. I thought it was interesting. I thought the folks seemed to dig it a lot, and it covered a lot of stuff. So I enjoyed it quite a bit. But
he
come into
a lot
it
about,
having known a bunch of this stuff, so it's tough.
He talked a lot about Bigfoot sex organs, which I did not see coming, but. No pun intended.
I was just going to say, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, but no double entendre intended. But, yeah, it was a very down-to-earth, grounded. I've seen Nick Redfern give presentations. Nick takes a different perspective. Obviously, he's like, they could be mystical creatures or creatures from other dimensions or tulpas or whatever, to which Lauren, I believe it would be safe to say, goes, no. But, it was an interesting perspective to me to see a presentation on Bigfoot and all these other cryptids, which was very down-to-earth and, taking a scientific look at things, trying to treat it as a science as opposed to more of a paranormal. I don't think Lauren used the word paranormal once, actually. I think it was always like, here's hard science, and this is biology and zoology, and it just happens to be cryptozoology because we don't know, we don't have these creatures, but here's a creature we did find, and it's weird. There was, I think it was a couple days later, I read in the news, I think it was the BBC maybe, but it was everywhere, they had discovered 12 new species. This one's just for you, Kelly Connolly, 12 new species of spiders in Australia, out in the outback, that nobody knew existed. And I thought, yeah, there's all sorts of animals and creatures on this planet that we don't know exist yet. So maybe Lauren's on the right track here, that at least some of these things that he's talking about might still be things that we have to discover. So I found it an interesting and refreshing, I might add, perspective, although I also like Nick's perspective, too. I like the more, the out there, wilder, theoretical thinking about the paranormal perspective that Nick brings, too.
Yeah.
So it's all good. I'd like to see the two of them on a stage together sometime have a gentlemanly debate about Bigfoot and cryptids in general in terms of their differing perspectives on what they might be. That would be fun.
Yeah, that would be cool. And then I should mention here, this is kind of like a – I hate just like Paul hates sitting at the table, I really dislike doing interviews at these events. Because I'm completely like, out of my element, and it feels like on a one-on-one, face-to-face thing, it's really a different sort of vibe for me than I would normally do on a Banal of America show. But God bless him. Like, while I'm sitting there at the table, still feeling the effects of the night before, Lauren's like, so you going to interview me or what? So it's like, oh. So thankfully, he sort of, like, nudged me in the direction to, like, get off my ass and tape some stuff. So Paul asked earlier how I was going to even format this. I have no idea. So either you're going to hear from Lauren Coleman now or you're going to hear from him at the end of the show. But I taped 15 minutes with Lauren. And, well, I wanted to segue that into, once I kind of figured out, okay, I'm going to do some interviews and stuff, I was like, who am I going to interview? Obviously, I interviewed Lauren and Stan, but there were so many interesting things going on in the vendor room that I was like, I need to get into this vendor room and get to the bottom of some of these things. Because it wasn't just like people selling DVDs and stuff like you would normally expect. These were quite the elaborate layouts of stuff. You said you didn't even go in the vendor room, though, right?
I did not. It frightened me a little bit because they had a giant gong and they had other people doing voice, and I just like, this frightens me. I'm going to hang out here with Stan or Lauren. Actually, I spent most of my time when I was down there watching the lectures because that's what I prefer to do. I like to hear people speak and the exchange of information. So I pretty much went to every lecture. The only thing I missed was the ghost writer panel, which is a shame. I would have liked to have gone, but it was given the night before, I just couldn't drag myself out of bed at 8 o'clock. I didn't get to bed. Plus, in my own defense, folks, I know you don't care, but I'm working late nights. Like, you know, my general schedule for the last 2 months has been get up at 3 or 4 in the afternoon and go to bed at 8, 9, 10 in the morning because I'm shooting films and editing. So I crashed into the Paracon. And getting up at 8 o'clock on Saturday was not...
Right.
It just was never going to happen.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I went to everything else. And so that's what I like doing. But yeah, you wandered off to the vendor room where strange events ensued.
Yes. I did this. Now, maybe if Kelly and Linda are still listening, they can shoot me the name of these folks. They have you hold on... No, they don't have you hold on anything. You just talk. You just talk and do like a do-do-dee-da thing you say. A clearly conscious from Toronto, Ontario. Yeah. Okay, so that's who it was. And they take your voice, and it does a chart thing. And I'm doing no service to these folks, so you're going to have to listen to I did a very good, I think, interview with them that we'll post in here somewhere, where they explain the whole thing. It was interesting. I don't know what to make of it. But I thought it was really interesting. And they were very passionate about it. That's what I liked about the folks in the vendor room. They were like, clearly, obviously, that's their gig, and so they're going to be passionate about it. But at the same time, it was like... I really got the impression they were trying to scam me or anything like that. It was like, these seem like folks who really believe this stuff, so let me get in there and see, you know, these are people whose lives have been changed by stuff. So, it's interesting. You got anything to say about that? What, you quiet now?
No, I wasn't in the vendor room.
Okay.
I have no idea what went down. I just know you came out and you told me about the gong guy. Which you can tell that story or not if you want. That's
I will.
Here.
I'll tell the story.
And it might have had a sort of an interesting monetary ending. And you did, you read whatever your voice analysis was. You said you came out and you went, Kimball, this is who I am.
Yeah,
it was. Like, and it's like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But you, it's important to note. Excuse me, sorry. That's
sorry.
Why I hate live. You're not going to be able to take that out. It's important to note, you were there with a press pass.
Right.
I think you were the only press pass person at the conference, actually.
Filming people were filming, yeah. But I was
there's
a few of
filming people who... But you were there as press. You were there to report on the conference. They were doing a documentary or something.
Right.
And it was your job to go snoop this stuff out. And now you'll be reporting on it. Now, were those the only two? Or was there anyone else that you...
No, those were the only two. It didn't really dawn on me till later that this was a good tack to take. So I didn't really... I should have filled more of my weekend exploring that. I have a few... We'll get there later in the whole thing. But, that was one of the regrets I have from the event, that I should have done more, because I really found that really interesting.
I don't know. you only have so much time. You did two in the vendor room. You did Lauren and Stan. You talked to Kelly, right?
Yes.
You did a little interview with her. Anybody else?
Not that I can recall. The gong guy.
Oh, and you did the investigation.
Right.
So you went on the ghost investigation. I mean, that's more, frankly, than most press people would do. Three interviews with hosts or speakers, two vendors, and a ghost investigation. Yeah, I think you earned your press pass.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Plus, we're doing this show, and I had Chip on to promote the event, so I did all of my required sort of pressy stuff. But anyway, so I don't know what to say about the voice analysis. You'll have to listen to the interview, folks. But what I thought was great, and I haven't actually – I'm in a bad way with my friend passing away. I didn't have time to sit down and listen to these interviews yet, so I'm going to do that late tonight and tomorrow when I put all this together and put it out. And I hope it's on the interview. But what I thought was great was – when I was getting my voice analyzed, first you say like do, da, di, that kind of thing into this microphone, and then this chart comes up. And it's all of a sudden, the lady says to her partner who was there, this was clearly Conscious from Toronto, Ontario, that was the group. She's like, Bill, get over here. You've got to see this chart. And I don't know, I even said that, I was like, are you putting me on? So I don't know if this was part of the show, quote unquote, or if I had actually a profound sound voice chart. But she seemed to think that whatever came out of my gullet was remarkable in chart form. So I thought that was kind of neat. Yeah, so it was cool. I wish I'd gotten the palm reading. That was another one that I wanted to do. So, like I said,
that's right. She was right out at the front, by the front entrance,
right,
wasn't she? She was the one I thought if I was going to do any of these, maybe I'll do a palm reading. But I'm always afraid that somebody will do a palm reading of me and then they'll just go,
yeah.
Go, what did that mean? She went, nothing. I was like, no, tell me, lady, tell me. Very short lifeline. How short? You're already over. What? Living on borrowed time. Oh, no, back to the bowling alley then. You know, might as well drink myself into an early grave. If I'm headed for an early grave, that's the way to go. Or death by Ooga Booga, as the old Boy Scout story went. So, I have no idea.
It was cool, though. Well, I guess just to put a bow on that before I'll get to the gong guy later, but to put a bow on it, just like, that's what I really liked about it. There was this interactive stuff. You know what I mean? That's cool to me. So kudos to the East Coast Paracon on that, and you know, don't shy away from that next year, because it was awesome, and I want to partake in more of that stuff.
And again, it was very eclectic and very sort of, it wasn't all just UFOs.
Right.
There were people doing different things about, actually there were no UFO vendors other than Stan.
Right.
So yeah, it was cool. It had, again, a paranormal conference vibe to it. Wasn't a ghost conference, wasn't a UFO conference, wasn't a Bigfoot conference. It was a little bit of all of the above.
Hmm.
And that's what made it fun. Yeah.
So then there was Stan, and I had to stay for Stan. I watched the whole Stan presentation because, you know, as I said, he's kind of like the Bob Dylan of the paranormal. So when I get the chance to see him, I watch him. And it was good. It was good. And it made me, you know, for all the stuff about, you know, Stan, he's been around forever, and if you've seen him, you know, all that, like, after watching his presentation, I still came out of it with new questions that I hadn't really thought of before. So I don't know if that's me or Stan or just the quality of the presentation or what, but I interviewed him later in the afternoon, and I had a couple questions where it was like they came directly from watching the presentation. So for anyone who's like, Stan, you've seen him a million times, I don't know. I came out of it with some new ideas, so... Yeah,
he tries. He makes a conscious effort to try and mix things up. And he was actually, I was talking to him beforehand, and he was, I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, and he was quite enthusiastic about saying, oh, you know, this is a new presentation, Paul. I haven't done this one yet. And, you know, I'm talking about a number of crashes. And I went, oh, okay, well, that's good, Stan. Because, frankly, 2 hours on Roswell, oof. And it wound up being about an hour and 15 minutes on Roswell and 40 to 45 minutes on the other four crashes that he sort of crammed in. And afterwards, he was a little disappointed, actually. He was very self-critical, which people probably don't associate with Stan. But he's like, he came up to me and said, yeah, that didn't go as well as I thought. Oh, I should have done less on Roswell. I should have you know, because he had plenty of time. He said, yeah, 2 hours, I didn't know what to do with myself, and then it was over. He said, I should have done more on Kecksburg and Shag Harbor And I went, well, you know, Stan, you can refine the presentations. First time you've done it. He said, yeah. You know, less of, what do you think I should take out? And I just said, oh, I don't know. I think you could profitably lose the 20 minutes on Majestic 12. And it's the closest he and I have ever come to agreeing on Majestic 12. He said, yeah, I can probably shorten that down to 3 or 4 minutes. And, you know, just touch on it, move on. I went, yeah, that's probably, that'd be good, Stan.
Yeah.
That'd be a good thing. So I think even he realized that showing, like he showed the Phil Klass check and, you know, here's the list of all the people on MJ12 and his Donald Menzel stuff. And I think he, you know, you can tell how an audience is reacting. And I told him afterwards, I said, they were kind of dead. Because it's unless you're really into the minutia of the Roswell story.
Yeah, it's very arcane, some of the details of that.
When they sort of got more interested was when he was, you know, talking about Kecksburg or, you know, just giving the general overview of cases. And even some of the nuclear propulsion stuff that he was talking about, you know, the idea of traveling to the stars. So, I think Stan knows that, and I think hopefully he'll try and sort of change his lectures up a little bit because he's moving that way. But, I mean, we would all take away something like that. I mean, I have a takeaway from my own lecture about here's what I probably shouldn't have talked about as much and here's what I should have talked about more. And you learn by doing.
Right.
So you see how an audience reacts to certain things that you do. It's like, oh, audience is starting to, okay, not getting the laughs or not, they don't seem as connected. Right. Skip, move straight to this thing, which, okay, that works.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's kind of like that's the difference between a studio album and a live recording or a live gig, rather. If you're out there on stage and the crowd's not digging the slow songs, time to throw in a few rockers or something to get the energy back up. So, you know, every speaker does that, and I think in every talk that I saw, there were parts where you could tell the audience was like, you know, maybe. And but for most of the time, the speakers course-corrected. And like Lauren was sort of, at one point, he was dragging a little bit about really getting into the details of some of the zoological kind of scientific stuff. It's like, maybe that would have been better at 2 minutes, Lauren. And then he started talking about Bigfoot penises, and that perked everybody.
Yeah.
You know, sort of, whoa. He's throwing up pictures of Bigfoots with penises. Okay. And I think people
there
sort
were,
of
yeah,
set
there
up.
Was, yeah. Right. Remember, like, you can't forget that, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, we have to talk about this, folks. These are real animals, and we have to talk about how they would mate. And I went, yes, bring it on. The 12-year-old boy in me was going, more, I want more, tell me more. So, that was Stan's lecture. It was fun. The five crashes, alleged crashes, were Roswell, Shag Harbor, Kecksburg, Aztec, and what was the fifth? Oh, the Plains of San Augustine,
yeah.
Which is sort of Roswell, but the other Stan Roswell crash. So, yeah.
So that was good, yeah. And like I said, and the cool part, because, yeah, I was privy to some of that conversation with Stan, you know, his sort of like post-presentation thoughts. And just as a super fan, which I still am and always will be of Stan, to see him sort of self-critique like that was awesome for me, you know, because it's like, it's like getting off stage with Bob Dylan and being like, oh, well, we should have done it, you know, it's like, this is wild. Like, this is pretty cool. I'm watching him kind of work out the set list here. This is pretty neat. So, you know, once in a lifetime sort of opportunity for me that I really enjoyed. Now, you talked about Barb Thompson and Laura Glenn Norris. They're the co-authors of Haunted Girl, Esther Cox, and The Great Amherst Mystery. You probably don't need to really touch too much about that, except, again, to put over that you appreciated that they were honest about the whole thing, which is great.
Well, they were debunking it, and that didn't become apparent until the end. They kind of told the story fairly straight, and it's the story of a young girl, I think it was in the late 1870s, and who claimed to be, for about a year, sort of haunted by a poltergeist up in Amherst, which is a town on the New Brunswick border, just across the border from Aulac, actually. And I had no idea that anything interesting had ever happened in Amherst, but now I know. And it's sort of a little dig at Amherst there. It's a long story. It's a personal thing to me. And it's, you know, it's like, okay, this a lot of this is the Old Testament. Joe begat Frank, and Frank begat Bob, and what? Wait, no, that wouldn't work. Sorry. what Old Testament am I in here? Leviticus. Whatever. It was the family history of who all these people were. That was actually, I found, very, very dull. But once they get out of that, it was like trench warfare. Once the tanks started rolling and, you know, on the planes or whatever, then it sort of got, okay, now this story's more interesting because there's a love triangle. Apparently she was jilted by some guy, and that's when she sort of went maybe crazy, and weird things were happening. And then there's this other guy who came in, whose name I can't read the book, folks,
yeah.
who came in, and he was sort of like a Svengali figure slash huckster slash, you know, I don't know, five other things, a traveling snake oil salesman who wrote the book on it, and they just, okay, this is much more interesting. And it was a tag team, too. It was actually very cute because they were two, I won't say older ladies, that's bad, but they were sort of like my aunts.
Yeah.
And they were, one would speak for 20 minutes, one would speak for 20 minutes while the other one would move the slides. And so it had a weird vibe because, in a good way, it wasn't just Stan doing his thing or me doing my thing. It was these two people doing their things, tag teaming. So you get different. It would be like, it was like watching Daniel Bryan wrestle with Kane as a tag team. Totally different styles of wrestling. And so you'd get Daniel Bryan flying all around, then Kane would come in, he'd just start smashing people. And these two ladies were like that. They each had different styles of presenting the information, different ways of speaking. And so it kind of, it was a nice little way to end. And then they finished and said, and of course, we agree with the psychologist who looked at this in the 1920s or whatever, who said that she was, all of this was made up.
Yeah.
The psychologically disturbed girl and blah, blah, blah. And since then, nobody's been able to counter that conclusion. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I did not see that coming. I thought we were going to go full Satan here, but no. Okay. Nice way. Weird way, I might add, to end the afternoon because, you know, you'd had Stan talking about space aliens and Lauren talking about Bigfoot, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't really a poltergeist. It was mundane explanations with psychological factors, probably. Oh, all right then. What are we doing tonight? Ghost hunting. Sweet. So it was sort of a roller coaster kind of thing, which was fun.
Yeah. So I missed that. I think that was when I was getting my voice analyzed.
It was, and that's why I just gave a more fulsome review than I would have otherwise, because I know you weren't there.
Yeah. So. No, you did awesome. Thank you. So then, as Paul noted, and I was exhausted, and Paul was even more exhausted because he's on this different sort of time schedule here. So then it was nap time, so we crashed for a while. And to his credit, Paul was really, really tired, folks. And I was pretty tired, but I knew at that point I kind of had to push through and get in as much as I could. And I'd never done a ghost investigation before, and I really enjoyed, like, the people. Everyone was so nice and everything, you know. The cynical side of me that was like, ghost hunt, forget that, was completely obliterated, where I was like, I love everyone here. I want to go on a ghost hunt with them. This is awesome. So to his credit, since even though Paul was really exhausted, he joined me on the ghost investigation. Before I get to that, though, I just want to mention, I said I had a couple regrets. The only other really big regret I have is I just wish I'd, you know, been more judicious with my time, maybe napped earlier or something, because I would have liked to have seen Chip Coffee, because everybody was raving about him afterwards. He had his presentation at the Astor Theater, which Paul and I later explored as part of the ghost hunt, and we got there just as he was finishing up, and people were just raving about him, and he was, like, holding court in the lobby of the Astor Theater, and it was, like, mostly ladies, just in general, as part of this thing. I said the demographics seemed that way, and they just loved him. That was just what I noticed. It was just this tittering, this giggling, this sort of like, he just had them all in the palm of his hand. He was so hilarious. So I wish I'd seen him, in perform, I guess you could say, or present. But I did not. So maybe next year. But I got to put him over because everyone seemed to love him. So, yeah. Then we got on the ghost hunt. And Paul, you've done ghost hunt before, so what was your take on the ghost hunt in general? I've never done one, so I'll kind of give you my thoughts later about what it was like, but based on your experience.
Well, it was, having hosted a season of a television series where that's what we did, we went out and investigated ghost stories. It was interesting because there's a fairly standard, I sort of call it pseudoscientific, way of looking at this, where you bring in all the gear. Let me rephrase, I used to call it pseudoscientific before I did my ghost investigating series, where perhaps my opinions changed a bit. And folks can go back and listen. I think I did a show with you where I talked about my book.
Yeah.
And if you can find that show, I think I ramble on for 2.5 hours about my various experiences and stuff. So that would be a good primer if you want to know what I think about all this. But, you know, they had the EMF meters, and they had the, which was cool. I had never seen this, some sort of laser grid thing.
That was
If a shadow walked in front of the laser grid thing or something moved, you would get a shadow. And so it kind of looked like something out of an ABBA concert, which was fun. And so, you know, they have all this sort of stuff. And there was a group of, what, maybe 12 people?
Yeah, there was 12 of us, yeah.
Yeah, plus Kelly, who was leading it, Kelly
Connolly.
And guys from the – no, I'm sorry, I know that. I was trying to remember the guy whose name escapes me from the Loyalist Paranormal Group up in St. John. He was there, too. I think there were two of them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was a good group. And it's interesting because they turned the lights off. Well, the first thing to note is the Astor Theater is a very old theater. It's a historic site. It's a lovely, lovely theater. And it was really hot because it was a summer night. There's no air conditioning. I think there were only 2 or 3 ceiling fans in this big theater. And the chipped coffee thing had been pretty much packed. So we were going in just after all these people had been in there, which creates, you know, heat and everything.
Mm.
So I just found it really, really hot. And I actually had a sweater and a jacket on that I had to take off. I found it so hot. And, they went through, they had a guy who helps run the theater, came down, he explained a bit of the history about the theater, told a bit about the ghost that allegedly is up on the balcony of the theater and a few other stories, and so that's good. Then Kelly sort of went through the equipment, explained to the people, here's what we do with an EMF meter, and here's how this works, and here's how we generally run an investigation, which was good, because these were not ghost investigators, the people. They were just, you know, they had come to experience it. And so it's like, okay, here's how these folks do it, here's the stories, and action, you know, which is kind of how we ran ghost cases.
Mm.
You know, it's like, here's the story, and, oh, here's how this crazy equipment works. All right, Holly Stevens and I, my old co-host, let's go in, and, you know, we never considered ourselves professional ghost investigators. We were just two crazy kids. Well, she was a kid, I was older. Two crazy people going in to see if something would happen to us in these allegedly haunted places.
Yeah.
So that's how I approached it, and it kind of ran itself like a ghost cases episode where the locals would give us the info and then off we went. And so, you know, I just kind of went off on my own, and you and I occasionally hooked up. Well, let me rephrase.
Yes.
You and I occasionally crossed paths and left the group, and we went down into the basement and other things. I had a weird... The whole weekend for me had a weird paranormal vibe, which I talked about on Greg's show, Radio Mysterioso, the Sunday after I got back, actually. It was like, I just got back, and now I'm going to talk about all of this. So folks can go listen to that there. I won't, because it, you know, take up the rest of the show. I had a weird experience, which mirrored one of my ghost cases, really weird ghost cases experiences. The same sort of thing happened in the Astor Theater to me, which... and along with a strange synchronicity, because I'd been having a run of synchronicities that related to my ghost cases co-host Holly Stevens and Les Mis, if that makes any sense. And it will if you go listen to Greg's show. So I'm putting both you and Greg over here.
That's fine.
I want to get to your experiences because I haven't heard them yet. And I thought it was great fun.
Mm.
I left a bit early because I was really starting to fade at 12:30, and I had to get up early to do my talk the next day.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be, I mean, that's what they had me there to do. I wanted to make sure I at least was awake to do it.
Yeah.
You stuck around to do the balcony. I didn't get up in the balcony. But, yeah, they were really great. Kelly was great. She was fantastic, sort of very friendly, very, helpful and a good storyteller, too.
Mm.
And it was a really... cool site. I kind of wish we'd done it for ghost cases because it would have been visually, the theater itself is just a wonderful place. So yeah, I had great fun. I'm glad I went.
Mm.
It was the first time I'd been on a ghost investigation since, you know, my last, it was like John Lennon's 5 years in the wilderness. I hadn't done, although it's ended better for me than it did for Lennon. but you know, I spent 5 years baking bread or whatever. I hadn't done any ghosty stuff. And to get back in action, as it were, I remembered the most important thing out of the ghost cases experience for me was it was fun. Like it was, and it was always fun to go out with Holly and to try and experience stuff. So it was kind of fun to go out with you and Kelly and these 12 other or 13 other people and do the same thing. So, yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Mike McNulty was one of the dudes, and Evan, I don't have his last name.
Those were the two guys, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. I really liked it a lot because, I mean, we've done ghost sort of shows before. We've even sort of ripped on ghost hunting on the show. Not you and me, but just being all of America. But to me, it was really... So, but it was like I said before, my cynicism was completely checked at the door on this, and I was really, it was a good chance to sort of learn about all this stuff, like how the equipment works and everything. Evan Rafuse was Evan's last name, Evan Rafuse, which is Linda's son. So I thought that was really interesting to learn about how this stuff works, and I didn't want the EVP thing at first because I don't know. I was just kind of like, I don't want to know if I'm near a ghost. But eventually someone gave it to me. And it really, I could see how people would really get into this. Because sometimes it had like five lights. It was, goes, you know, as allegedly the ghost gets closer, it goes to five. And there were times when I was like by myself in the basement. And it would like just spring up to three. And kind of like hang around a little bit and then pop back down to one. And it was like, oh, Jesus. Am I near a ghost right now? So I could see how it would be really addictive, how you'd want to keep doing it more and more. So I thought that was cool. I was very intrigued by the lights out aspect of it. I asked Kelly about this on the show. It seems to me like a recipe for disaster, just because I kept thinking I was going to fall off the stage. But I guess you just have to be more responsible in that situation. But it was like, oh, geez. It added an element to it that was really disorienting, which I kind of liked, but I have no idea really, you know. I guess it all depends on the ghost hunting group, in a way.
Yeah, well, I think it makes you, I think it helps you focus, for one thing.
Yeah.
Because you have to be focused, otherwise you're going to walk off the stage or run into a, you know, a metal bar or something, who knows. And the other thing, too, it's almost like where you do the sensory deprivation tank or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You remove a lot of the outside stimuli like that might distract you, and it, you know, it allows you to, I enjoyed it. Holly and I did it a few times, and frankly, whenever we did it, something strange usually seemed to happen. So, I think it's a good way to kind of just focus yourself and go, right, let's just breathe, and there's nothing here, I can't see Tim walking by or making faces at me or whatever. So, I was all for it, although I did kind of wonder, like, are we going to hear, somebody fall off the stage or...
Right,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But everybody, I think, sort of... Kelly was very responsible in telling folks to be careful and all that sort of stuff. And she was also, she played the debunker a little bit, too. She said, look, with the EMF meter, here's, if you get a reading, it can be a lot of things, and most of them are prosaic. So it could, you could be near a power outlet, or you could be near wires, or who knows.
Right.
And so she didn't just go, here's an EMF meter, that's a ghost machine. Every time it pops, you're near a ghost. Which I have seen so-called ghost investigators do. It's like, yeah, this is a guaranteed ghost thing. Boom. And every time you hear a voice recording on your little voice recorder, boom, that's a ghost. And those are the kind of people that give ghost investigation a really bad name. So Kelly was very careful to say, look, most of the time this is probably what it is. But you never know. Some of the time it might be this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she says here, darkness heightens your senses, which I agree with. It definitely was like that. But it was, for me, because I'm not used to it, I was like, "What? I'm confused." But I thought it was just interesting, because I never even considered it, I guess. So when they were like, yeah, then it's lights out, we turn all the lights out, I'm like, what? What? So that was kind of neat and interesting, worth pointing out. And then Paul and I, there's all kinds of pictures on my Facebook. I got to figure out how to get this for people who don't have Facebook to check it out on the Banal of America site. I'll put the pictures up. I'll try and tie all this in on the website. But so Paul and I were like behind the stage. Downstairs is this is the dressing room, and Paul and I explored that for a while, looked around and stuff, and that was interesting. And the funny sort of part of the whole experience for me, which Paul and I have talked about since it all went down, was So Paul goes upstairs. Then I go back down with this guy who was on the ghost hunt, who I'd never met before. And he was kind of like, he reminded me a little bit of like Bob Backlund for the wrestling fans. He had this sort of just like happy-go-lucky, lovable sort of dude. Not bad guy, old man Bob Backlund, but like classic WWF champion Bob Backlund from like the 80s. Sort of just this like, just down-home sort of good guy vibe. So he's like down in the basement, in the dressing room part with me. And he just, there was this door that Paul and I apparently just didn't even notice. Because I don't know about you, Paul, but I never even, like, gave it a second thought. And I had spent, like, 20 minutes down there.
I noticed it, but I didn't give it a second thought either. I thought it just led into a storage closet. It was, because the basement of the theater is the dressing area. There's a long row of mirrored, you know, where the actors would sit and get made up and everything like that.
Yeah.
And it's quite narrow. And then there's a door right next to that, and I just thought it led to a storage closet. I didn't even think to open the door. And it led into a wonderful, wonderful sort of ghost hunting, you know, the kind of quintessential place where you like to go if you're looking for ghosts.
Right, right. And what I loved about this guy was, like, he just, like, took one, like I said, Paul and I just kind of didn't give it a second thought, but he just, like, took one look at this door, and it was kind of, like, jammed shut in a way. It didn't really open smoothly. And he just, like, turns the doorknob, just starts yanking on it, just, like rips this door open, and was like, Jesus, who is this guy? So then we're under the stage, and there's all kinds of pictures of that. And I'm in complete, you have to hunch over, there's pipes and everything there. And I'll play it here for the folks, but it was just so, like, again, it just had this adorable quality to it, where I was trying to do, like, this on-site under the stage thing, and I'm like, I'm under the stage. And I'm like, what's your name, dude? And he's just like, Barry. So after that, me and Barry became, like, best buddies through the whole trip. And Barry went through every door he could possibly find underneath this stage. He was, like, insatiable with exploring under there. It was really remarkable. And I'm like, this guy's awesome. I have no fear, because Barry's leading the way through this horrifyingly creepy under the stage thing. So, yeah, I miss old Barry. But then Barry leaves. And I found another door, and because of this because of his insatiable quest to go through every door, I was like, I gotta find Barry. So of course it's all pitch black still, folks. So I go upstairs and I go up onto the stage and I'm like, Barry, Barry. And there's no answer. And for like a split second, maybe 10 seconds, I really genuinely thought that maybe there was no Barry. And I was like, Barry, where are you? Where's Barry? Legitimately frightened that I was just hanging out with a ghost under there. Then all of a sudden I hear, hey, what's going on? I'm over here. And I'm just like, oh, thank God, Barry. So he was a good guy. Apparently, he got us access to the balcony where the ghost allegedly lives. And then they were like, all right, well, you guys can go up there. Barry, you definitely can go because you're the one that asked. And he was like, no, I don't want to be the one anything. I don't want to be the one anything. He's the one. And, like, points over to me. So it's like, I'll be the one, Barry. It's all good. So he was just this lovable dude. Just an incredibly lovable dude. So, yeah. And then I went up to the balcony and hung out up there where the ghost lives. I mean, I tried to take EVPs of this. Well, you know, I don't know what you say when you try to take an EVP. I ran the recorder, but I've listened to it, but I don't really hear anything, so I don't know. I didn't get any EVPs, I guess.
So you've listened to your recordings then?
Yes, of the EVP parts, yeah, where I tried to get the EVPs.
Oh, I was going to ask you, because I didn't know whether you'd listen. Kelly and they had at least one or two other audio recorders there. I don't know if she's been through the what they had either. I haven't seen a post or anything. So I was curious. One of my questions has been answered. What, did anybody hear anything or pick anything up that might be anomalous? And you're saying you did not.
From what I can gather, I think I still have maybe like another 15 minutes of stuff to listen to, but I didn't do it the right way. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not a ghost hunter. So I would just turn it on and turn it off at my leisure. You know what I mean? I didn't just have like a recorder going the whole time. Because I do everything in this luditic way. My voice recorder only had a certain amount of time on it. So I wanted to make sure I could interview people and stuff the next day. But I did record some stuff, but I didn't hear anything. And I don't know. I hate those people that are like challenge the ghosts, but then at the same time, like, I went and sat in the chair that the lady allegedly sits in all the time because I thought maybe that would at least sort of engender some kind of reaction. But from what I can gather, nothing came up on my stuff.
The ghosts work in mysterious ways, Tim.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I had a weird experience. That's all I can say. Did you have a weird experience personally, leaving aside your electronic equipment? Did you feel anything strange, or was it anything at all? Or was it just a fun night out at the Astor Theater for you?
It was really just a fun night out at the Astor Theater. The only time I really felt anything, like, strange, and it's just a feeling. It's not even – I wouldn't even chalk it up to anything, like, paranormal, even remotely. But I think it was – probably more my mind playing like tricks with me, but just the sort of when Barry left and you were gone and I was under the stage by myself, and I just sort of got like, I don't, like I said, I think it's more my mind playing tricks on me, but I was kind of like thinking to myself, like, you know, maybe I'm not really alone down here, maybe there is something, you know, I'm by myself here under this thing. So I mean, I've really gone off the reservation here by myself. So maybe there is something under here, but it wasn't anything where I was like, oh, God, did I hear that? Or anything like that, no.
Except for when you thought Barry might have been a ghost.
Yeah, except for when I thought Barry was a ghost, yeah. That was although I did see, I did see Kelly, like, there's a picture on my Facebook that's, Kelly has the EVP thing on her leg. I wish I had brought this up to her, and she'll probably write because she's listening. And I mean,
wait,
this.
Do you mean the EMF reader?
Yeah, what did I call it? EVP? Yeah.
Yeah, EVP is the voice
right,
thing.
Right, yeah.
EMF is the electromagnetic.
Exactly. It's like NWO to me. I get them all mixed up. So she had the electronic voice, electronic meter thing on her leg. And like I said, I know she's listening. I wish I had brought this up because they're taking pictures of, because she got the thing to get to five. And so, I mean, if there was a ghost, and if it was all really, if it all works that way, then it's clearly I saw something happening. K2 meter, it's called.
Right.
And what I thought was interesting, this is the part that I wish I had asked Kelly more about, but it's like, it seems like everybody talks to these ghosts, first of all, you know? Like, they talk to them, and they all talk to them in a different way. And I think because she's like a mom, she, like, talked to the ghost in a way that was, like, reassuring, but also, like, she was talking to, like, a little kid or a pet or something. And, I mean that in a positive way. I'm not like, hey, what, you know. It was like, because she was, like, she kind of coaxed it into doing more, which I thought was interesting. I don't know, like I said, I don't go on Ghost Hunt, so I don't know how people do it. All I seem to ever see is, like, people going, are you here? Are you with us? And it's like, but she was kind of like, she was kind of like, hey, you know, we're here, do you want to make yourself known? And then we'd kind of go a little bit, and then she'd be like, that's good, can you get it, you know, can you turn it up more? Can you get it to the five? And, like, just coaxed this into happening, which I thought was really interesting.
No, I didn't know. I must have been down.
You'd already left after that. That was like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've never been a big fan of the talking to the ghost thing.
Hmm.
Now, I did it because I was doing a television show, so you didn't have much choice.
Right.
But when I did it, it was always tongue-in-cheek. And frankly, for me, it was usually I was making fun of the ghost, or, you know, I was asking a ghost more than once. We used to call the segment ghost dating. You know, especially if it was an allegedly female ghost, I would try and ask the ghost out on a date or, you know, whatever. I never took it seriously because I always figured if there really are some form of ghosts or whatever here, I'm pretty sure that, you know, if I have to put myself in their shoes.
Right.
I'm not reacting well to these people going, hey, are you there? Hey, say something. Hey, can you make yourself known? I mean, like, perhaps, hey, I'm supposedly from the late 19th century. Perhaps you should ask me about the 1896 election. Did you vote conservative or did you vote liberal? You know, what did you think of Wilfrid Laurier?
Right.
Things that might make sense to me as opposed to, hey, are you here? So, yeah, but she was better than most that I've sort of known. I thought of all the ones that I've ever heard at Kelly's was the least egregious, and I know that everyone does it, so it's not a
right.
Kelly, it's just me and the way it works. She, I'm much different. I'll put a clip up on my Facebook page later tonight. I have several of me taunting ghosts.
Mm.
And the weird thing is, some of the times when I would do it, strange things would happen. And it's almost like, at one point, Holly, I remember saying to me, oh, you really pissed them off now. This can't be a good thing. Maybe I should stop doing this. This might be a bad idea. So I kind of developed my own thing, which is just to sit there or to stand there or wherever you are and be quiet and see if something will enter. You know, don't challenge the ghost or don't ask the ghost to, you know, if there is a ghost or if there is another advanced non-human intelligence or whatever there, just let it do its thing. If it wants to interact with you, it will, and if it doesn't, then it's not going to.
Yeah.
So I have a bit of a different perspective on that, but to those that would do the chatty thing with the ghost, then it was weird, though, because there were like 12 or 13 people, and at one point, this was actually the reason I left and went downstairs, almost all of them were doing the talk to the ghost thing.
Right.
I didn't
right.
mind when it was just one or even two, but you were getting like 10 or 11 people going, hey, are you here? Hey, say something. Hey, over here. Hey, hey.
And the poor ghost is probably like, what? Yeah. I got to get out of here. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Or at the very least, they were all saying basically the same thing, so it was like an echo chamber.
Mm.
And I just went, ah, the cacophony, I can't take it. I got to go
someplace
where it's quiet. And, you know, maybe the ghost, if there is a ghost, went, it was like the same thing. It's like, oh, my God, two or three I can handle, but what are all these people doing?
Yeah.
The reason I didn't go to heaven, I don't like people. I just, you know, I wanted to be alone. Ah. Well, perhaps you shouldn't have haunted a theater then.
Mm.
But unless it was a theater where my old band was playing, and then you would have been alone. But
nice.
I think it went really well. Kelly, I give her an A plus.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I said,
investigating tour guide.
I was. She says here, personally, I treat spirit with respect, the same as I would someone standing in front of me, and I totally agree. I just think that her style was really unique, and I think it was advantageous because. She coaxed this. It seemed like she really coaxed this thing to really light up the meter. I mean, just that's what it looked like to me. So it was like, this is remarkable. Like, what is, you know, so interesting stuff that I really enjoyed on the trip there.
Well, it is something, you know, it's like when Holly and I would do it, Holly was much more like Kelly. She would be very respectful and very comforting and everything like that. And I was not. I was the snarky, disrespectful, whatever.
Mm.
And, you know, I always thought she's probably a better person. She is a better person. She's, if there really is something here, then I'm not being very nice to it. And she was being much nicer. So, you know, when I heard Kelly, it was kind of like, you know, if I could close my eyes, it was like working with Holly again, in the sense that that's how Holly used to do it. And I think that's probably the better way to do it if you're going to do it. It's just I could never take the talking to ghost thing seriously, so I would always be sort of sarcastic and snarky, at least as I started out. By the way, I don't do that anymore. Now I just stay quiet because, you know, I had enough experiences where I decided perhaps taunting the ghosts is a bad idea. So I'm just gonna be quiet.
Yeah.
But I can't do the sensitive, touchy feely stuff. It's just not in me. So I choose to be quiet. But yeah. So kudos to Kelly. She was, if you are gonna talk to them, she was good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it was a unique technique that I think probably yielded some good results. So that was
interesting.
It'd
be interesting to see when she listens to her. Audio stuff, if she posts it, you know, did she find anything or pick up anything?
Yeah, she says she's working her way through it.
There you go.
So that was the end of the night. I think we wrapped up like at 1 in the morning, and then I went back to the hotel and hung out on the patio waiting for Paul by the window, but all I ended up with was some dude who lived there for 3 months. So I don't even know. So then the next day, the final day, Sunday, it was just Paul and the angel lady. I enjoyed, it's going to sound disingenuous because you're the guest and everything, but I really enjoyed your presentation. It was kind of a cool addendum because I had read the book and had you on the show to talk about all this. So, you know, it was cool to sort of get like a refresher and at the same time, you know, revisit some of your insights into, you know, the paranormal in general. So I give it high marks.
Well, thank you. I'd never done a lecture on my book before. And the things that I learned, you know, I criticized Stan a bit for going on too much about Roswell or MJ-12. I went on a bit too much about my paranormal as an art theory. I could have done that in 5 minutes and then told more cool stories. Because the cool stories are, you know, it's you want to entertain people too, and that's what they're there for.
Right.
And I have plenty of cool stories, so it's like, here you go, folks. Some of which involved me, and some of which I did some UFO stories too that obviously I was not involved in. They're just historical cases, high strangeness cases that folks hadn't heard of. So, excuse me, yeah, I had a really good time. And it was what was really fun. I won't tell you, you know, I won't repeat all my paranormal experiences on the weekend because, again, it's on Greg's show.
Right.
Stan, this was actually really cool. Linda was doing the slide projector stuff or the computer, the PowerPoint thing for a couple people, and Stan offered to do it for mine. And I used to do his once or twice when he would speak, and I'd be there with him. I'd run his slide projector back then for him. So he sat down. I kind of joked. I said, the pupil has become the master, or whatever, you know, the Star Wars thing, because here's Stan Friedman turning my slides. And then he gave me his little green laser pointer. And I said, this is like Obi-Wan giving Luke his lightsaber. And so I had Stan's laser pointer, and I had Stan, who I referred to as my slide monkey, more than once, you know, turning. And he did a pretty good job, although at one point he kept going, went too past where he was supposed to. He went, slide monkey, backwards. And he went forwards again and went, no, the other backwards slide monkey. And he's like, whoa. And, you know, it was a humorous moment. He took it. He was laughing. Yeah, I could see him sitting down there. Every time I'd call him slide monkey, he chuckled.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was not meant to be offensive, anyone. It was weird because Stan and I had not seen each other probably, I think, maybe for 5 years. We hadn't spoken to each other in 2 or 3. We email occasionally, but just hadn't come up. And so I was supposed to see him last summer at our family reunion. I hadn't gone in several years. And he had a heart attack. He had his heart attack the night before the family reunion. So a few of us joked, including his daughter, my cousin and I, you know, great, Paul comes to a family reunion for the first time in years. Dad has a heart attack.
Yeah.
Coincidence? You know, sort of. But the weird thing is, Stan emailed me a week before the Paracon. And he was going to be on the new Art Bell show, Midnight in the Desert. And for some strange reason that I still don't understand, Bell wanted him to talk about faked moon landing photos or whatever with this guy, Jay Wiedner, I think.
Yeah, it was a moon hoax debate.
Right, a moon hoax debate. And Stan sent me an email. He said, what do you know about the moon hoax stuff and the photos? You're the only filmmaker guy I know. I need your help here because I don't know anything about this other than I'm sure we landed on the moon, but I have no idea. I've never really looked into this. I don't know why Art Bell wants me to talk about this. I thought, yeah, that's weird. So I called him back, and we had a nice chat, and I did a little research for him, and I said, look, here's 3 articles that completely debunk the crazy faked moon photo stuff. This is all you need to read. And he said, yes, absolutely. I agree completely. Thank you very much, Paul. So, okay, strange. So there's Stan. He's sitting there doing my PowerPoint presentation. And at the end, I was running late, and I said, I really don't have time for questions, but I feel obliged. I'll take like 2 or 3 because I know the next lady, the angel lady, you know, we got to get me off the stage and her up. But I didn't want to be rude. So I said, 2 or 3 questions real quick. And the first question, this lady raises her hand. There's like 3 or 4 people raising their hands. And I picked this one lady, could have picked these other ones. And what does she ask me? She asked me, what is your opinion on moonwalking? And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
And I had a slide when I was trying to do my paranormal is the art thing, talking about co-creation. I had a slide that wouldn't play on my PowerPoint presentation, a YouTube video that their machine was not configured to play, which was a mashup of a Michael Jackson song and a Beatles song. And so I was thinking Michael Jackson because nobody else, I'd sort of mentioned I can't play this for you, unfortunately, but it's Michael Jackson and the Beatles. And I was thinking, is she asking me about Michael Jackson? What do I think about moonwalking? And I thought, well, it's, you know, it was really fun in the 80s. And she went, no, the moon landings, the, you know, the where the photo's faked. And I went, whoa. And even Stan, his head kind of, because I had been talking a bit about synchronicity during the lecture, too. I talked about the whole Walter Bosley, the night, everything I did in L.A. and that's in the book. And even Stan's head kind of turned, and we both had a moment where we went, we hadn't talked to each other in years. The reason we talked to each other for the first time in years was because he asked me about moon hoaxes, which is nothing either of us would ever talk to anyone about, much less
each other. Yeah.
And then the first question I get, which is unrelated to anything I've been talking about because I never mentioned it once, is this lady who asked me about faked moon photos. It's like, whoa. And so my answer was, yeah, they're not faked, ma'am. And by the way, this is a really big synchronicity or coincidence, however you want to look at it. And then I sort of briefly explained it, and people are like, wow. And even Stan was like, yeah, that's weird.
It's pretty weird.
I talked to him
yeah.
afterwards, and he said, yeah, that was weird. I said, yeah, no, didn't put her up to it or anything. It was kind of like a paranormal point, you know. And you haven't mentioned it, see?
Yes.
You had your synchronicity thing, too. What hotel room were you in at the Commons Inn?
Oh, there was two synchronicities. In the Commons Inn, I was in room 311, and then at East Coast Paracon, I was in room 311.
There you go.
Weird. Yeah, there's an even weirder one with the from the ferry, but we'll. There's one more story here from. We talked about the angel lady, so that's kind of we covered her. So that was pretty much the whole event, except for the gonging.
Ah, yes.
I should tell this story, and a lot of it is because I'm a clown. So I don't want Phil to think that I'm ribbing on him. So, but I had posted a picture of the gonging layout, let's say, on Facebook, and everyone, I'm like, should I get gonged? And like everybody was like, do it. So I'm like, all right, I'm gonna get gonged. So I interviewed the man who was doing the gonging, Phil Crosby. Which first I just to lay the groundwork, I made a Bill Cosby joke, which didn't go over at all very well with Phil Crosby. But anyway, he was a really nice guy. He looked like a slightly chubbier version of Nick Redfern. He was English, bald, wore like one of those kind of like shirts that Nick wears, from what I can recall. But he just reminded me of a bizarro Nick Redfern. And so he gets me in the chair. So I'm like, hey, let me interview you about this. And you're gonna hear the interview tonight, folks, on the show. So. I interview him about the gonging, how it works, what it's all about. He does this amazing thing where he has, like, this water inside of a metal cup, and he, like, runs the gong wand around the edge, and the water, like, starts, like, oh, I don't even know. It looks like it's boiling, but it's, like, reacting to the sound waves. It was really amazing. And he explains, you know, 90% of your body is water, so when I gong you, it's going to, like, do that to your body. And it was like, oh, boy. So I'm like, should I get gonged, dude? You want to do it? You want to gong me? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I get in the gonging chamber or whatever, and I don't know if it was the gonging. He said I wasn't sitting back far enough, which he didn't tell me until after the gonging, which I wish we adjusted during the gonging, but it lasted like 20 minutes, and I was sort of teetering the whole time. So it was very weird. I think it had to have something to do with the gonging, though, in a way. Like, I was vibrating. And I couldn't really, like, I kept feeling, it's like balancing on your ass, you know what I mean? It's like you're balancing on that on the chair, and it was like, this is really weird, and it was really interesting. I mean, I don't know what, I came out of it sort of with the same feeling you get maybe from a massage, do you know what I mean? Where you're disoriented in a way, where you're like, you're just kind of in a completely different realm than you were when you sat down for it. And I thought that was really cool and everything. And because I was pressed, it just didn't dawn on me that I had to pay for any of this stuff. So Phil gives me like this reading afterwards and sort of tells me what he picked up from the gonging. And he's just a really sweet guy and just really nice and really like affirming and sort of just like builds you up and was like, Tim, you've got a great heart. You've got a great heart inside of you. You got to let it out more. Let the world see how wonderful you are because you're such a wonderful person. You're just so wonderful and, like, filled me up with just such love and everything. And I'm just like, this was – all right, dude. Thank you, Phil. This was amazing. So he, like, starts to walk away. And he's like, Tim, one more thing. Come here. And I'm like, all right, this is the big – this is like – all right, what's this? And he's like, you know, we're going to need $20. And I was like, what? And he's like, well, you know, we're it's the gonging's $20. I was like, oh, Phil, really? It's kind of like, and again, this is me being a clown, folks. It's on my own, you know, I should have brought it up. But I was like, ah, oh, geez, I wish you mentioned that before we did the gonging, Phil. I can't return the gonging. You know, I can't undo the gonging. I'm morally obligated to pay you now. So, unfortunately, because I'm also a clown, I only had $19. But he was gracious enough to accept my $19. So, lesson learned. But he was a great guy, and you'll hear from him on the show. And again, it was more me being a clown, but just the way the story unfolded, I thought was amazing, because it was just like I thought I was going to get the final revelation there at the end, and it was like, no, I got hit with the bill.
There's no comment. I mean, but that's what they're there for, the vendor thing.
Exactly.
The only thing
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Like the only thing I
go ahead.
You were press. The only thing I would say is most vendors I've ever dealt with, if somebody with a press pass comes by and says, look, I'm going to interview you and blah, 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 generally speaking, they comp you on whatever it is.
Right,
there.
Right.
So that when you told me about that, I thought, well, that's a little weird. But fair enough, too.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I'm not criticizing him. I just thought normally you would have gotten comped.
Right, no. He had every right to ask for the $20. Like I said, it was me being presumptuous in a way where, naively presumptuous. You know, I didn't go in and go, yeah, screw this guy. I'm just going to get a gonging for free. I was just kind of like, hey, man, let's talk about this and do the gonging and share it with everybody. This is awesome, you know, so... A miscommunication that was hilarious.
Indeed.
So that was pretty much the event. Then we bid farewell to Linda and Kelly and the gang and headed back to Halifax with Stan in tow. I got to be Stan's roadie, which was kind of neat. I started out a long time ago doing Stan's slides, and I've come a long way. I moved all the way up to Stan's roadie.
You were very quiet on the drive back. You basically just let Stan and I rag on various people within ufology, which, and I won't name any of them, but
of course not.
It was fun. It was behind this. What did you call it? You got to look behind the curtain of Freedmania or whatever.
Freedmandia, yeah.
Freedmandia, yeah.
Yeah, sort of like the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe kind of thing. But yeah, it was cool. Like, well, you know what? You and Stan are family. You've spent, and even though you say you hadn't talked to him in a long time, you've certainly spent more time sort of talking to him in an informal setting than I ever have. So to me, it was like. I'm a big proponent of, like, speak, you know, better to keep your mouth shut and have people think you're a fool than open your mouth and erase all doubt, you know. So I was kind of like, when needed, when my opinion was asked or if I had a question, I'd chime in, but it was very rare. It was few
True.
And far between.
Yeah, and Stan and I, like I said, we're, you know, people wonder, like, oh, Paul and Stan don't agree on much. You'd be surprised, folks. You know, we tend to agree on a whole lot of things that don't relate to UFO crashes. Particularly some of the personalities within ufology. So it was a kind of a nice little, what would they call it? Gab session or something? That's the polite way of putting it on
yeah.
the drive back, which was fun. I haven't done that in years with Stan. So, yeah, we did talk about the Roswell slides. That was true. And I was very complimentary to Stan for having the good common sense to not go to Mexico City and make a complete fool of himself like those who did go to Mexico City did. And you should have Stan on your show and interview him. Or ask him at your Christmas special when you have him on or whatever. You have him once a year, right, at Christmas.
Yeah. I believe I actually, when I interviewed him at the Paracon, I think I asked him about the Roswell slides. But I'm not sure how much we got into it because the angel lady was going to wrap up. So I kind of had to wrap it up myself before the crowd came out.
Yeah, but he was pretty withering in his criticism, at least behind the scenes, of the whole Roswell slides thing. And good for him. So, yeah.
Yeah, and like again, sort of like talking about how he, how I got to see him sort of work through the post presentation. It was cool for me just to sit back and sort of listen to him cut loose with you. So to me, it was like I didn't mind. Plus, you know, it's weird. I was talking with Greg about this last night. We kind of chatted for a little bit, and it's like I always even though I'm a super fan, and but now I'm kind of like a friend of Stan's. I feel like there's still kind of this, like, I'm a journalist in a way or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, yeah, you know, I don't feel right sort of like pestering him with questions or anything like that when we're just hanging out, in a sense, you know what I mean?
Well, the interesting thing about Stan is I always tell people that, you know, when you can get him off his talking points, so it's kind of like watching Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton or anybody politicians talking. They have their talking points, their media lines, whatever you want to call it, and they repeat it, dum, 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 dum. And so to some degree, that's a Stan Friedman lecture. Yes, he varies it up every now and then, but basically the theme is now the same. He's the Rolling Stones. He's not doing stuff from his new album. He's not even recording a new album. He's playing, I Can't Get Satisfaction in Tumbling Dice. Fine. If you can sit down with him, though, even for 5 minutes, but longer is better, and have, like, he and Lauren had a dinner together and lunch together, and Lauren was saying one of the joys of coming up to the conference, besides meeting me, of course, was, he got to sit down with Stan, and they could just shoot the proverbial poo, as it were, and it was very Canadian. Shoot the poo, yes, which makes it sound like you're out killing Winnie the Pooh. But Christopher Robin's gone rogue. Shoot the poo. Where's Eeyore? I'm gonna kill that mother. Anyway, he has a wide range of interests,
right.
And he's a fascinating conversationalist. He's a really cool guy to talk to,
yeah.
Which is what I've always enjoyed about Stan more than his lectures, which I've seen a dozen, 18 times.
Yeah.
So the first time or two you see it, it's fun, and then after that, it's. But when you get a chance to talk to him, which is why these conferences, people sort of, and maybe this is my closing point because I see we're almost near the end here, I guess.
This is, holy God, a beautiful voice chart.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a beautiful voice chart, folks.
You guys see this.
Wow, she's calling over her partner here to check it
this
out.
Is Bill.
Bill, she's
Bill
calling Bill over.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
I've got a top-notch voice chart.
You have a
Holy
very
gosh.
Powerful.
Very powerful being, honey.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, nice.
Very sensitive being at the same time.
Yeah. That's so amazing.